do our confirmation hearings of members of the Environmental Quality Board. It was our last meeting. We had a very good discussion about the activities of the Environmental Quality Board, and three of the candidates were not able to be at the hearings, but they are here today, and we appreciate your presence. And perhaps all three of you could come, and we can have a similar discussion to what we had last hearing. Well, welcome to the committee, and we thank you for being here. Maybe we could maybe just start with you three introducing yourselves and you know, making any type of opening statement that you would like.
Hi, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Julie Gehring, and I'm from Moorhead, and I work with a Red River Basin Environmental Group, and I've worked there for 22 years, and I was born and raised in Alexandria and grew up around the lakes and enjoying all the natural resources and continue to do so.
Morning. Thank you, Senators. My name is Suma Carville. I'm from Hopkins. I work for the City of Eden Prairie at the Water Treatment Plant and Utilities Division. I'm also a small business owner in Hopkins. We own a liquor store. And my kind of claim to fame is just being involved in my community. From things that my children have done coming up through the years, I've served on boards and committees and groups and belong to many of the organizations in the community, Twin West Chamber of Commerce, Hopkins Business and Civic Association. So, you know, I like to contribute to my community and be a part of what's going on and be aware of what's going on. And I appreciate your calling us all back together again a second time. I know your time is valuable.
Thank you.
Good morning, Senators. Thank you for meeting with us today. Again, I apologize for not being available last week. My name is Dennis Wenzel, and I live in St. Paul. I grew up in central Minnesota in Little Falls on a small farm, so that's kind of where I centered myself on enjoying the natural resources. I'm an avid angler, hunter, sportsman, and currently I've spent my career doing a variety of things in state and local government, much of which is related to policy analysis and business transformation related to technology. Early in my career, I worked for the state of Minnesota in welfare to work, dislocated worker programs, helping citizens kind of navigate through policy changes as the state changed the welfare to work programming. So I worked directly with citizens as they navigated through that change. I moved into the private sector and have been currently working as a manager both here in Minnesota and across the country, helping large technology transformation projects in excess of $20, $30, $40 million, primarily in labor and industry, unemployment insurance, helping state organizations kind of break down silos, improve their technology systems. Part of that has included a lot of reviewing state statutes, policies, and so I'm hoping to bring that to the board, my professional background of understanding how to manage and analyze policy, with my passion for the outdoors. As I often tell people, my labor and industry work pays the bills, but I really would rather be out fishing or hunting or out in the outdoors. So I hope to kind of mix some of that experience with the board. So thank you.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Chairman, Mr. Wenzel, many of us would rather be out hunting and fishing and trapping.
Yeah. Why don't you folks maybe start by telling us why you'd like to be on the EQB?
Okay. I believe that EQB is a very good agency to coordinate. There's so many agencies in Minnesota. I've worked with Manitoba and North Dakota, and there are very few agencies that deal with water. And in Minnesota, there's a whole group of them, and I feel the EQB is a very useful board for dealing with all the different issues and interests involved in water and natural resource management. And I have been the communication coordinator at the Red River Basin Commission for 20 years, and I know how important it is to communicate the things that you're doing with the the citizens in that live in that area. So I feel that I can help get the message out of what the state of Minnesota, how they're working on all their water resources and all the good things that they're doing and managing it. So that's what I'd like to help bring to the board. I've only had a few meetings, so I'm just learning all of the issues and all of the things that the EQB is working on. So I'm hoping that I can contribute by getting the public informed.
That's really good. When I knew that I wanted to do something at a higher service level, when we were past the hockey boards and the little league boards and the school groups, I thought, you know, I would really like to move up to a bigger agency or a higher level of service. And so I read a lot of the appointments that were open, and this just seemed to have such a wide range and such a broad scope of authorities. And I work for a water department. That especially interested me. And I really wanted something with this broad scope. Everything else seemed very niche. I think there was a lot to learn here. I've learned so much, and I've really appreciated being able to be a part of it and learn things from the from all of the testimony that we hear and from the tech reps and from the department heads. So that's been very interesting to me, and I would like to be able to continue to bring my unique perspective of just the person coming in from the community to the board.
Thank you.
Chairman, Senators, I think my main interest in the board was that I really wanted to find an opportunity that mixed my professional skills with my interests. And as I looked to the board and I considered how I might want to serve, I took a look at the main mission of the board in terms of coordinating and overseeing policies across government agencies. And in my professional experience, as I've worked both here in Minnesota and in other states, I realized that not unlike large private sector industry, there's a lot of bureaucracy across agencies. And I think the EQB provides a tremendous forum to bring the very important commissioners together, bring some citizen members together, and then allow members of the community to hear debate, discussion on important environmental issues. And as environmental policy has become really kind of forefront in everybody's mind and in the dialogue, I just wanted to be able to participate in that and try and lend anything that I could in terms of my understanding of how communication between agencies, breaking down some of those government silos could work. I think the board's been very collegial that way. I've been very pleased in seeing that. I've only been here for a year. I look forward to helping move forward with some of the future goals of the board.
Senator Pariseau?
Mr. Chairman, I just have to marvel at the wonderful mix of interest and experiences that all of you bring to the table. And it's a marvel that you decided to do this instead of just another night job to fill in whatever. And so I think that your skills are obviously very well honed for the positions you're going to face.
Ms. Gehring, give us a little more insight on the Red River Valley. Since you've worked on there closely, what are the issues that the Red River Valley faces, and particularly with regards to water and the EQB, and what sorts of things should this committee, as an environmental policy committee, be looking to, either to help the EQB with its job or to, to review on our own?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Red River Valley is primarily very flat agricultural land, as you may know, and the biggest issue, of course, is always flooding. But the past 20, I guess I've been having a job for 22 years, and we have a lot of citizen input. We do a lot of public meetings and an annual conference. We just had our 25th annual conference, and the issues are still the same after 25 years that we've noticed going back, and we did a little history book, and it's always flood control is one of the top priorities, but there's also a water supply issue that's emerging, and I think EQB has such, with all the agencies and coordinating, it's just great because they can take the opportunity to look at all the interests as far as water quality and flood control and agriculture and try and balance all of that. And I have known Mr. Wells on the EQB staff for several years, so I've worked with him and funneled information to him about some of the things going on. And I think that water supply and water quality issues are emerging now. They always have been there, but flood control has been a top priority, and that is probably never will be totally taken care of, but there's been a lot of projects and a lot of efforts going on to help reduce the flooding in the Red River Valley. So I think now the citizens are looking at water supply, and of course with the Red River flowing north into Manitoba, the water quality issue is becoming very big because Lake Winnipeg is becoming very polluted, and nitrogen and phosphorus levels have gone up, and obviously we're contributing in Minnesota and North Dakota, so I think the health of Lake Winnipeg is a big issue that I would like the EQB board to look at, because and Minnesota PCA is already looking at that too. So, but I think having Brad Moore on PCA on the EQB board really helps the whole Red River Valley because of the water quality issue in Lake Winnipeg.
So what are the flood control policies that we should be aware of?
I think the, like I said, over the last 10 years, the Minnesota Red River Watershed Management Board has worked very well with Bowser and PCA, and they have a mediation process where all the agencies have been working together so that the permits are issued a lot faster and the projects are built from the bottom up. They have citizen input at the very beginning when there's a project idea. They have project team meetings all throughout the 9 watershed districts in the Minnesota side. And so all the project team meetings, I think it's been very well coordinated. Since the flood of 97 in the Red River Valley, I think that was kind of the impetus to really start coordinating projects from early on, everybody getting involved from developing the project to implementing and getting the funding for it. When in the past, people didn't get on board until way later, and it was a lot harder to try and get a project. So I think that, like I said, I think the whole flood control part of the problem that we're having is, I think there's a good process for that now. So
when you say project, what is a project? Is it a dike, or is it a way to kind of mitigate some of the, you know, the runoff?
Good question, Mr. Chair. There, project can be projects and programs. There's several different things going on. There have been some North Ottawa project is a big dam that's being built, and there's several other projects, but usually smaller scale, and most of them are programs, just reducing the timing of the water when the runoff. They're just doing a lot of diking. I guess dikings are helpful. It's helpful to do diking, but it also kind of pushes the problem onto someone else, so people know that that's not going to be a solution, but it temporarily helps. But there's some modeling projects going on right now that they're trying to figure out the timing of all the when the water is released, and so there's a lot of different efforts that don't involve structural things but just programs that may help with the flooding.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Some years back after the last major flood, some of us were on a trip up into that area and toured it, and it really was quite fascinating to see the planning that was going on for kind of, as you say, a variety of the diking systems. And I'm trying to remember what the terminology was out in the agricultural area that around smaller communities and homesteads that would protect that and would also, I think, slow some of that runoff into it. And then you also had some, in some floodplains, the acquisition of some of the properties rather than rebuilding in them and having that added, a constant rollover of damage done to people and to people's homes and their lives. So it seemed like there was quite a mix and so a lot of planning going on for dealing with these things because, with the river flowing north and it's thawing first here, it really does, you've got a kind of a dam to the north just on the ice. So it is really a unique kind of situation to have to cope with.
That's right, Senator. That's exactly it, because there are ice jams that send the water back. There's a lot of problems that because the river flows north. And some people don't even realize that. Even some citizens, don't really realize there are so many more problems because of the ice jams. And up in Winnipeg, the last 2 years now, the water stewardship, they have purchased it, what's called an icebreaker, to break up all the ice jams. And they spent, I don't even know how much money, but it seems to be helping with the flooding up there. So, but yes, there's diversions. There's all kinds of floodplain management. There's greenways, buyouts. A lot of the places after the 97 flood, a lot of the places that were in the flood area, they, you know, they bought them out and they're not building there and they're making greenways, they're making parks and recreation. And it's been very good for the Red River Valley because there wasn't a lot of recreation areas. So the flood in a way kind of helped define that we can't stay there and we can't build in those places. And so they have a greenway project in Fargo-Moorhead and Grand Forks, East Grand Forks, and up in the Winnipeg area. That's been very useful. So,
is the Red River Valley an example of the need to talk about these issues on a basin-wide basis as opposed to just watershed basis?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is Representative Lanning had a bill this session that was kind of promoting that, and I'm sure Mr. Wells could give you all the details on that because he's worked with them on writing that or getting that legislation. And Representative Lanning was the chairman of the organization I worked for about 15 years, so he has the basin-wide management. He's always promoted that, and that is a good way of looking at it. That's why I feel like the EQB is such a good board, too, to look at the whole picture. I mean, it gets real fragmented of people doing one thing that might hurt the other. So as long as there's good communication between the agencies, I think that helps get to the common goal of flood management and water quality and water supply issues.
You would say that we, some sort of organization needs to be created to look at issues on a basin-wide basis.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe that some organization such as EQB can be looking at it like that. And our organization, the Red River Basin Commission, we have a 41-member board made up of state agencies, federal, state, local units of government, and three citizens at large also that do just that. We have no authority, but we have influence, I guess you would say, because the organization does not have authority to do anything. But when we come to consensus on something, we can promote that and write letters and use that as all these different organizations and people with different interests agree on doing something. So that's our organization's been around for about 30 years. So
I don't mean to pick on you, but we haven't talked about this enough in this committee. So having someone with your background on this issue is interesting.
To that point, too?
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems the Red River Valley seems to be an obvious basin with some unique needs for using that kind of organizational structure. But as you've looked at the whole state, does the whole state fit into any neat organization by basin, or are there some areas that need to be treated that way and others they don't have quite the same kind of makeup? We have such a unique state in
right.
terms of its geography and geology and everything else that's I think that's one of the reasons we have some challenges in how we approach issues. And you want to be sure that you have you're looking beyond just a small area. But is the basin the answer, or are there other kinds of structures or areas that you see making up the state that need to be considered in that organization as well?
Ms. Gearing.
That's a good observation, Senator Olson. Like I said, Representative Lanning's bill is looking at that, and I know Mr. Wells could probably give you more detail on that. And as far as I know, the state of Minnesota is very diverse, and just when I go to different watershed organization meetings like the state Minnesota State Watershed Association conferences, it is very interesting to see the watershed districts in out of the Red River Basin or Red River Valley are working on mostly are concerned about flood control. And then I see the ones down in the Twin Cities and West Central Minnesota, and they're really working on a lot of water quality issues, which the Red River Valley, those watershed districts do work on those issues, but they're more toward the bottom. So I know the state is very diverse, and I think Representative Lanning's bill has been looking at that and going through a lot of different restructuring it and getting a lot of input, and Mr. Wells has been working with that. So if you have specific questions, I'm sure he could answer them. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wenzel, have you been involved enough? I assume you've attended some of the meetings so far. What have you identified some key ways in which your professional background can be brought to bear, or that there are needs within the operation of the EQB that that your background will be beneficial to?
Thank you, Senator Olson. Yes, thank you. I think especially the subcommittee on future EQB direction. I didn't participate that in full because the group had analyzed the policy up until that prior to my joining. But I think there's going to be some continued work in that area in terms of analyzing what direction the EQB is going to take in the coming years, and how we're going to utilize the current statutes and rules and processes of the EQB. And so I know I've talked to some of the other members and about getting more involved in that, and that's where I'm hoping to direct some of my energy, at least in the near term.
Ms. Gehring, Ms. McCarville, would you like to maybe answer a similar question in a similar way?
As to what do I feel I bring to it, or where would I like to see the EQB go?
How does your background bring to bear how you feel the EQB should be moving forward?
My background and experiences specifically, I've just been on a lot of boards, and I think that I am able to listen to people who come into our board and hear what they're saying from their perspective. Not from the perspective of the head of an agency, not from an expert in a field, but when someone comes in and testifies before us about the impact something might have on them, I hear that. You know, I've sat and I've listened to coaches and I've listened to players, parents, and you learn to listen to what it is they really want to accomplish past what they're saying. So a lot of times I think I've been able to ask that question they want to ask that they're too embarrassed or too afraid to ask.
But your experience in the water treatment facility, I think, is interesting. What have you picked up policy-wise from your work there, and how do you think it might apply, if at all, to the board?
One of the things that, working for the city of Eden Prairie, you all know that we've been on the news as being a high consumer of water. We pump a lot of water every day. We've applied for 3 new wells over the next 3 years. It's been interesting to hear the process to apply for the wells and how you justify how much water you need. And I think sometimes what I would like the powers to be to know is that we know what we're doing. Eden Prairie has utilized a lot of the private technology for their well management. We know we've invested a lot of money in knowing what wells to pump when so that they're most effectively using the water. And I'm not even sure that the state knows that cities do that. I think they look at gallons pumped and they go, they're sucking water out of the ground, but we're doing it reasonably and logically. So I would like to keep making that point whenever I get the chance. At least in Eden Prairie, we're pumping water logically. I look at the EQB right now, and with so much awareness and everyone's got the phrase global warming on their mind, I think we have a really nice opportunity to get the public to start buying into things that we've been trying to do, you know, into conservation methods. Before, it was just a game of trying to outwit the people who wanted to conserve and preserve. I think now we have a chance to really get buy-in to the whole thing.
In what ways?
Because I think people are hearing a consistent message, your what you do matters. There's an impact. If you're using too much water, it actually matters that you are personally doing it. If you take your SUV off-road and you destroy a wetland, it personally matters. People are finally, I think, starting to personalize their impacts on the environment. Now, how can the EQB affect that? I'm not so much sure that they can, but I think the agencies can use this awareness to really speak to individuals.
Do you think that climate change is an important consideration in your future work on the EQB?
I think that it has to be something that you... I think it always has to be just in the background, an operating unit in the background. Where it's going to come into play in the EQB is when you start looking at cumulative impacts. The last 2 years on that board, we've had several instances where people have brought cases up saying, well, this is a cumulative impact. And I think the EQB can really take a defining or a lead in defining what is a cumulative impact and what's affecting a broader area. So I think while you consider global warming, I think it's under the umbrella of cumulative impact.
But you agree that we are experiencing climate change?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCarville, I have to say that I make regular pilgrimages to Eden Prairie to the Miller Spring. Mm-hmm. That wonderful water that they have down there. And I know that Eden Prairie kind of oversees that. I don't know if that was a part of the department that you're working in. But has there ever been any indication in terms of the regular testing that is done as to any problems with that, or has it continued to be a good pure water supply source?
It falls under the park department. It is regularly monitored for any kind of pollutants or high chemical levels, and we've never felt the need to even close it for a brief time. It's always been safe.
Mr. Chair, it's wonderful water.
Senator Fredrickson?
Ms. Chair and Ms. Gearing, I have another question for you. I think it was at the State Ducks Unlimited convention. I was talking with an individual from North Dakota, and he was telling me, and I don't remember if it's actually occurring or is going to occur, that Devil's Lake is, from its natural outlet, going to be discharging water that eventually is going to end up in the Red River. Is that occurring now, and what kind of concern is that to the board on which you serve or work for? And does that put kind of Minnesota between Canada and North Dakota? Because I know Canadians are very concerned about what for them would be exotic species coming from Devil's Lake into Canada. Is that something that you're familiar with or worked on?
Ms. Gearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. Yes, that is one of the biggest issues we're working on right now. And it is true that Devil's Lake is going to overflow into Stump Lake, which will eventually end up in the Red River. Mm-hmm. And there is some information that there's some trickles actually happening now, but if the lake gets any higher, it definitely will do that. So that's why they built the outlet, which has been very controversial, and Minnesota and Manitoba do not agree with the operating of the outlet. And that is a big issue, and the organization I work for does work on that, and we get an update at every board meeting. And it's one of those issues that we can't take a position on because we have agency heads on our board from each of the jurisdictions, and they, you know, can't agree on the operation of the outlet and the whole Devil's Lake issue. They do know that there's a lot of flooding going on in Devil's Lake and that something needs to be done about it, and our board has recommended that they do some infrastructure, you know, giving some money for that and things like that. But as far as the whole issue, that we will never come to agreement on it. It's just a matter of keeping updated on the issues involved with it.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Gearing, just a couple other questions. Is the outlet a natural outlet? Did this one naturally occur, or has it been channelized or developed so it will be an outlet for Devil's Lake?
Ms. Gehring.
Thank you. The North Dakota State Water Commission did build an outlet, and they had planned on operating that, and then it took a long time for the water. Well, it's not really being operated because the water quality standards aren't being met to operate it. They can't. The water quality is not good enough to use the natural. So the natural outlet, like I said, is Stump Lake, and it's trickling into that. But they say if the lake gets several inches higher, it will overflow and go into Stump Lake, which will eventually end up in the Red River. So.
And Mr. Chairman, that is a natural outlet for Devil's Lake?
The Stump Lake is, yes, but they did build an outlet also that they were planning to use a few years ago, and because of the water quality issues, they operated at just a few times. So.
And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Wentz, I did, coming home from Bismarck a couple of years ago, I did drive through Devil's Lake. It's really amazing how much that water level has risen. It's rather astounding.
And they want that outlet because of flooding or duck management or what?
Mr. Chair, it's for flood purposes. The interesting thing is when I started working for the organization I work for, we had a Devil's Lake task force, and it was because the lake was dry. I mean, it was very low, and so their economy revolves around fishing. And so now about, I was 5, 6, 7 years later, then the whole flooding issue became a huge problem. And so the last 10 to 15 years, it's been a major problem in Devil's Lake. They keep moving houses and moving people, and towns are emptying out around Devil's Lake. So that is a huge issue.
Mr. Wenzel, your views on climate change and its impact on your work on the EQB?
Chairman, I firmly believe that there's enough scientific evidence that says that there is something occurring in our environment that is modifying our, is creating some form of climate change. And I think in terms of the EQB, with our charge of strategic planning, strategic focus, I think that the climate change component will definitely fall in line with our discussions, and I think it's going to be an important part of our discussions, but it's going to probably have to be within our strategic planning and our long-term broad-based review of interagency policymaking.
How is climate change currently affecting water quality or availability or both?
Chairman, well, I guess maybe could you clarify what you're looking
for?
Or is
it?
Yeah. Is climate change affecting water quality or availability or quantity?
I guess I don't have a good answer as to whether that's occurring now or it's going to be occurring in the future.
It's not a scientific question, by the way. It's just your opinion.
Yeah, I think overall that there are enough signs that say climate change is affecting water, whether it's here in Minnesota, nationally or internationally. So I think it's something that we have to continue to look at in terms of reviewing. Minnesota, we would have to consider is the temperature change impacting ice out, which then impacts spawning patterns of fish. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we have to look at. I look at it as something that we need to consciously consider on a regular basis and look at the scientific data and make decisions based on that.
Ms. McCarville?
Senator, I might add that while you keep climate change as an overall, in the back of your mind as an overall problem, I think when it comes to water quality, there are so much more obvious things that you have to look at, so many more obvious things that you know impact water and that you need to continually work on. Runoffs would be the first thing that comes to mind, pollutant loading, drainage issues. I think that there are so many known things that we need to keep being vigilant about that to take a broader effect and say how does global warming affect water? While we know it does, while we know lake levels are down, while water gets warmer, it affects things. I think it's really important not to lose sight of the things that we know that we can quantify and that we know have an impact and that we can do something about.
Ms. Gehring, climate change?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do agree that climate change is something that EQB Board should be looking at as an overall, you know, there's so many issues to deal with, but I do believe that we should keep up to date on all the science and all the new reports that are coming out because there's real science that proves it is happening.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Gehring, with regards to the Red River Valley, is it your opinion that the water management in the springtime is being handled properly by those on the eastern part of the valley that run water towards the Red in a kind of an uncontrolled fashion, or how is that being managed? I know it's very contentious there, especially those that are closer to the river.
Ms. Gehring.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. I believe the coordinated water management approaches are being taken now, and the Red River Watershed Management Board has the 9 watershed districts, and they meet on a regular basis every month, and then they have subcommittees, and they're also working on a main stem modeling project that will tell what the releases are coming into the Red River and the timing. There's a timing analysis study that tells about, you know, if they time things different, that it could affect the overall flood problem in the Red River. So I do believe it's very well coordinated.
Good. Thanks.
I just have one last question. Are there any rules that you would like to see changed within the EQB as far as environmental assessment worksheets or EISs? Or are there any rule changes you would not support? Mr. Wenzel, would you like to start?
As of now, I know we've been reviewing some of the cumulative effect rules. I think that we made a decision on making some modifications of those. I support those modifications. And I don't have all the details of what all those are right now, but I know we had made some modifications on those. But other than that, I don't have anything that's pending right now that is up front on my mind that would.
McCarville.
I don't think there's anything that I would specifically change. I think the board functions really well. And I think the reason I think I probably wouldn't change anything is because they do such a good job of getting stakeholder input and involving everybody who's involved in any particular scope of activity. To seek to get the input to make sure that everyone is heard, and there's when there is an issue, it's worked out. It seems to be working very well the way it is. You know, we hear from builders organizations, from logging organizations, from farming groups, and they all seem to appreciate that they've been heard, and by being heard, they're able to understand and comply with the requirements.
Ms. Gehring.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Ms. McCarville that from my limited experience, I've seen how it works. I think it's working fine right now. I wouldn't see anything that I would want changed.
Ms. McCarville.
I would raise the visibility of the organization. There's just, and I think I put this in my letter to you, there is an astonishing amount of knowledge and such a wide scope of responsibility. And I think that the legislature may not know it's there and may not know what a resource they have. And it's probably underutilized, and I'm sure they're not going to appreciate my saying that you should give them more work. But they're just such an enormous resource, and I think using them as a clearinghouse when you need information and going to them and saying, who has this data? I would like to do this bill. is there somewhere in the state that already has this information before we go out and regather it, I think could be a good resource to you. And also, may I address the question that you had about my liquor store and my money?
Yes, yes.
When it makes a profit, I'll report it. We're very new, and up to this point, I'm kind of financing it with the day job. So that's why I didn't report any income from it.
Source of compensation to fund. Is it any economic interest, or is it, do you have to actually receive income?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, and the three of you, when I look at the job that you're going to have to be part of, and its future populations, settlement patterns, air and water, solid waste, transportation, energy, growth, development, land use planning, I would hope that you would keep the political process out of this altogether. That's the way I feel. Politics should not enter into your decisions, and I hope you would agree with me on this.
Can I speak to that?
Ms. McCarville.
In the 5 years that I've been on the board, I have not felt that it has ever been an issue once, and that was an amazement to me. I don't think it will be an issue in the future. I found the staff to be completely professional, and I've been stunned at how little I've sensed any political leanings.
Ms. McCarville, looking at the statement of economic interest, you've owned a liquor store for 5 years.
I'm thirsty.
You're getting thirsty, huh, Mr. Senator Vickerman? You have not received any compensation from your liquor store since in those 5 years?
That's correct, which might call into question my business management skills. But when we started the store, we started it from scratch. And our house was paid for. We refinanced our house to do our original inventory. And since that time, we've put everything that the store has done back into expanding it. 2 years ago, we had an inventory anomaly that showed a profit, and that disappeared the next year when the inventory anomaly was corrected. So, and I did bring current tax returns to reflect that. But at this point, the store owes me the entire loan of my house plus about $13,000.
Okay. We may just want to... maybe Mr. Rhodes can help you, too, with this. Maybe just want to double-check what, because sometimes under the definition of sources of compensation, they may include a bunch of things that are not obvious. Would you help her with that? And if you only report if you've been written a check, then that's fine. But maybe we can just double check that. Maybe because it is a statement of economic interest, and so perhaps the source of compensation includes economic interest. So we'll check that out, and if it is the case that you do need to report that, we'll ask that you amend your statement of economic interest before we vote on your confirmation on the floor. So we should start working on that right away. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I think if we've completed it, I'm impressed with the good variety of perspectives that each of these members bring, as well as the one that we had before. And I don't know if you did take a vote on the one that we heard before.
We did.
If not, I would like to recommend that we submit to the Senate and recommend confirmation of Julie Gehring, Susan McCarville, and Dennis Wenzel.
Thank you. Any other comments from the members? Witnesses, final remarks?
Thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you for making time to be here and for the discussion. So Senator Olson moves that the names of Susan McCarville, Dennis Wenzel and Julie Gehring be recommended for confirmation and sent to the floor. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. We understand the motion. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all for being here, and if there's no other discussion, the meeting is adjourned.